This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Black Friday, well, shop Wayfair now. Month-long big deals, yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong, check out the song. Best gift and core, Black Friday scores.
Garlands and trees,
saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets, better you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Here's a good clock, area roads. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the season.
Welcome to the Lorehounds and our special coverage of the PBS miniseries The American Revolution. This is episode 2, An Asylum for Mankind. I'm David. I'm one of the main hosts of the Lorehounds. And with me for this special project is Loremaster Brian 8063. Brian is a bona fide Loremaster in American history. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm well. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. We're going to be covering this latest installment of Ken Burns in kind of a different way than we might normally, given the nature of this show. And we had a plan, and then we realized that was different than how they were releasing it. And then we even learned a little bit more about how they were releasing it. So we've adjusted our plan. So hopefully it'll work. All episodes are available for streaming. If you're a subscriber of the PBS ecosystem, whatever, it's called Passport or something.
Passport,
I don't know all the details of it. But I believe it's still airing terrestrially every night from 8 to 10 p.m. Local time, I guess, or Eastern.
Yeah, Eastern Standard.
Yeah. And so what the nice thing is that we can actually kind of watch on our own pace, and we don't have to stay up till the wee hours to record and try to get a podcast out. So we're going to still do the six episodes. We're going to do one episode one podcast per episode, and then we're going to do a wrap up later. I was in Boston yesterday, of all places.
Nice.
We're catching up with episode 2 today, and one of the nice things about this is that we don't have to be as rushed, right? We were trying to let's get this done in half an hour, so we could.
We're slow cooking.
Yes. Once the series concludes, we are going to get together for a special series wrap-up podcast with Marilyn R. Pakila. If you don't know Marilyn, she is our favorite Tolkien scholar, one of the regular co-hosts, kicking around the Lorehounds network. Not only is she a history buff herself and sort of grew up in the New England region, but she was a professional research librarian as a primary career. So we'll have dates when we... We'll announce when we have a date for that once we actually pick a date for that and get that logistically organized.
That's right. Yeah. She was on the Discord last night. We had a nice conversation. So the conversation on Discord is gelling. So it's very nice.
I saw that this morning when I jumped on that there was a lot going on. I was like, whoa. And it was too much for me to catch up on. But we'd like to invite you, dear listener, if you're not already on Discord, you're welcome to join us there. We've got channels for all the different stuff that we cover on the Lorehounds Network, and we've got channels for all of our affiliates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to have conversations, ask questions. Brian posted our questions template in there. So I saw Nancy M. Filled that out as well the other day. That was
nice.
Great.
Yeah.
But we also welcome your feedback. If you have concerns or questions or want to add something or you want to participate with the template thing, send that in. You've got to do it a little quickly because we're rolling forward. But if it takes you a minute, we'll have some of those collected for the end of the series and the series wrap up podcast.
Yeah.
Definitely, as always, please subscribe and support the podcast if you can. Please check out all of our affiliates on our network. There is a link in the show notes. It's a Linktree thing. It's got all the links. If you want to know more about Brian's background, you go back to episode 1, and I think you can hear that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be using this template each night to help us process the episode. So all of that out of the way, big breath. reflections from the previous episode. I got some feedback from someone I'm very close with, and that gave me a couple of perspectives that I thought were interesting to share. I was also walking through Boston the other day, and I listened to another podcast where there was a conversation with Sarah Botstein and Ken Burns. But Brian, so I want to touch on those things, but Brian, I wanted to invite you if you had any, not reflections on episode two yet, because we're going to get into that, but having seen episode two, now looking back, how are you feeling about episode one?
Yeah, you know, the big thing for me is just getting an appreciation for what Burns is doing and respect that he is trying to jam a lot of information and he has to use these broad strokes.
Right.
So I kind of reflect back on the appreciation that, you know, he does have a broad brush and that, you know, limits, but also it's really necessary, I think, if you're going to try to do only a short series of six episodes for 2 hours, you know, there's bright scholars, historians, you know, spend lifetimes studying all this. So
go to the American history section of your local bookshop and volume upon volume, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Thomas Jefferson, books on Thomas Jefferson are one of the top ones that go up with Lincoln. I mean, it just like cranks this stuff out. So that appreciation for the broad stroke kind of comes out a little more as we are expanding from episode one.
Yeah. Right. Well, and that was something that I noticed too, was the idea that, okay, so I'm reframing my thoughts here a little bit to fit this in. My reflection of episode one has changed now that I've seen episode two.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into it.
Okay.
And for the better.
Yeah.
An appreciation for what he had to do in episode one, which is he had to speed run us 20 years.
Yeah. Exactly.
But he also had a other trickier thing to do. And this is part of the feedback that I got, was that if he had done too much in certain aspects, he might have unintentionally alienated potential viewers of the work of this show because maybe certain, you know, people coming to the show with certain already formed opinions, as most of us all do, and then they hit a counter to their opinion, and then they make a broad brush assessment, oh, this is that.
Yeah.
And I'm out. This person has this political agenda. This is a bunch of poppycock. I'm out.
Yeah.
And so he's got a very fine, he's got a very narrow path to tread.
Yeah.
To be able to open up the story, to tell the things that haven't been told, the things that are known but haven't been told, that don't live in our mythology.
Yeah. Yeah.
To open that up. And then to invite people in to reconsider what they hold as already, what they hold as a truth, to realize that that truth may be incomplete.
Yeah.
Or that the conclusions that they've drawn from that information may not be supported by some of the facts that have, that were being exposed, new facts to us, right? Not new facts in the world, but like, hey, I've never encountered that idea or that thought or that fact before. Yeah. How does that change my point of view on this? And if somebody has calcified beliefs or, you know, this is the way it is, and then you have that counter information, that can be disturbing and off-putting. And it can, and it can, it can have an effect of you deciding to go, this is not for me for whatever reason. I'm out. See ya.
Yeah. 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 I think that is very thoughtful because Burns and his team know their audience and it's as broad as possible. So you don't want, you want to steer that balance as much as possible, knowing that there are new material out there. The scholarship has grown over the past 40 years mm-hmm. about bringing in new voices, and you can't ignore that. But you do have on the, shall we say, the other side, the standard narrative, which is still important, right? So you do have that important balance that if you go one way or the other, yeah, you're right. The people are not going to be interested. And there's a lot at stake, right, for PBS, especially in this climate, right?
Right. Where we have countervailing tendencies, yeah, I guess right. we could say. Winds are blowing from different directions.
And, yeah, defunding of PBS, right? They're so financially, there's some stakes, high stakes there. So this is like one of their tentpole programs.
Mm-hmm. And Ken Burns is really associated with, like, the brands are very tightly integrated.
Exactly, exactly. So, yes, there is a balance that Burns and his team have to make.
And I, you know, you can read into it that these winds blowing or these counter, you know, narratives may be coming from, you know, you may be reading into my broad descriptions. Oh, he means those people over there. And I would posit equally that that can go a 360 degree. Mm-hmm. I'm not just talking about a particular party or a particular segment of the United States. I'm talking about all of us.
Yeah.
Coming to this with preconceived notions from wherever we are on political spectrum, that it could be as much from the left as to the right. Oh, you're not telling this enough.
Right.
You missed this salient detail. You know, here's this micro story about this particular area, and that's been completely washed. And so he's got a really narrow path. Yeah. And I want to shout out a podcast, the On with Kara Swisher is a podcast on the, I forget which network it is, Slate, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
And she had Ken Burns and Sarah Botstein are out all over the place doing all kinds of activities and promotions. So you can hear interviews with them all over the place. But I found this interview was particularly interesting. And Ken Burns gets quite passionate about a couple of things. It was very fun. And it was great to hear Sarah because I hadn't really heard her before. And I got really moved by some of her motivations for why she has worked over 10 years of her life to produce this thing, and talking about her family and her kids and legacy and that kind of stuff. So it was really inspiring. But Ken Burns was saying that, oh, you know, he was on a particular network and they have these different call-in lines for people who have different political things. And he was like, yeah, I'm catching it from all sides. But everybody universally says to me, but we love your stuff. We're big fans of you. So he kind of knows where, how to center himself based on that feedback. And his job, and he talks about this, his challenge is not to offend people or to upset people, but to broaden the conversation.
Yes.
To really get people engaged in thinking, because when we monomythologize history, we lose, and Sarah Botstein talks a lot about this in that podcast, that when we lose the nuance of history, then we lose our sense of self in the greater ebbs and flows of the course of human events.
Yeah, exactly.
And we start to run headlong into problems.
Yeah.
Because we're not being thoughtful and engaged in history. We're being monomythological about it. And then when something happens that doesn't fit that simplified
vision, maybe.
Yeah. Then we suddenly are like, wait, crisis. What's going on? This is crazy. This doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, history, you know, you're getting into the weeds of historians, we're always questioning, you know, asking those kinds of questions to broaden the perspective, because new sources pop up, or you look at other sources or that you've examined before with new lenses and new vision, and you begin to say, oh, now that's interesting. Why did that person say that? Well, there is this background here that no one's explored. So history is a living kind of organism.
Right.
Yeah.
And
ever changing.
And we're questioning and evolving our understanding. And you can look at, say, homosexuality in the United States and the ways that we've had laws and cultural practices. Now everybody's like, oh, gay marriage? Oh, Why would we abolish it? Like, what's wrong? Like, it's fine. Like, so we're constantly examining ourselves and reevaluating and moving. And, you know, the quote of the long moral arc of the universe, or, you know, but unless we're engaged in those questions and reevaluating and unearthing, or even just re-looking at texts that we already know, then we're disconnecting ourselves from a way to be in the world, which is alive and present.
Exactly. It's part of our story, and there are many chapters in that story, and national identity, but it's also a group of people, right? And this is what the founders are trying to struggle with as we go through this series. It's like, how do you get to different constituencies that have different viewpoints? And it's not an easy road, but it's a mix.
And some of the other feedback that I got, and we saw it on the Discord as well, as this great conversation I had with this person, was the use of A-list celebrities, which I poo-pooed the other day. And I agree with the pushback that I got, or the alternate viewpoints, which is those voices make it more accessible and people can hear and see themselves in these voices in a way that they might not have. It's a good story. Using these actors is a way to broaden the reach of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. It's a tool to bring people in. We've got Tom Hanks, Paul Giamatti, right? Yeah. Playing John Adams, which was a fabulous HBO series. I highly recommend it for people.
Oh, I didn't even cross
he played John Adams, right? Yeah. And so it was so good. And yeah, it draws people in.
Did I hear Josh Brolin's voice in there as well? I'm sure the list is quite large.
Yeah.
I heard a number of like over 400 speaking roles across the 12 hours. So that may or may not be accurate anyway. So, and the last thing I wanted to comment was, as I was walking through Boston yesterday, I took a commuter rail, did a little park and ride shuffle, got into North Station, and then I had about a half hour walk to where I had some meetings and stuff. So I got to walk by the State House. I walked by, you know, down some old, you know, narrow streets and stuff. Hmm. We'll talk about this a little bit more, but about Boston, because like that's one of the things that I was surprised by is Boston and the maps. But that as I'm walking down and I'm seeing these statues, or I'm walking through this park, or going back, the history like became alive for me in a way that it hadn't before.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that was kind of, for me, it was kind of fun. I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of cool. I'm from the West. We don't have the history, right? I'm from the Pacific Northwest.
Tear down.
Our history is very different. We don't have as many visible signs or, Concord and Lexington. Yeah, I just drove through the other day, right? You know, like Yorktown. Yeah. Oh, you know, whatever. You know, Quebec. I was just in Quebec.
Yeah. Right. There you go. Exactly.
And it's suddenly coming alive for me in a way that it hadn't before. So that was kind of fun.
That's nice. Perfect.
Great. Well, let's get into our discussion of the episode. This is episode 2, An Asylum for Mankind. This is covering the period of May 1775 to July 1776. I grabbed this stuff from the major episodes from the website.
Nice.
For the American Revolution, they have a great set of resources. If you want to dig around a little bit more, definitely go to the PBS website and go into the Ken Burns. And they've got more resources if you have any questions and you want to dig in. But this goes from the capture of Fort Ticonderoga, if I can say that right, the Second Continental Congress, the Battle of the Battle of Bunker Hill, forming of the Continental Army, Dunmore's Proclamation, the burning of Falmouth, the Battle of Quebec, a British evacuation of Boston, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and
I had a question thrown in there at the very end.
Yes, please. What's your question?
So it's named Asylum for Mankind. Mm. And so I was trying to throw out there, why was it called Asylum for Mankind?
And what thoughts did you have running around in your mind?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, sometimes you get titles that are like thrown right there in your face, like someone will quote from a letter about that, but maybe I missed it, but I don't remember someone saying asylum. no. for mankind.
No.
So I'm wondering if, is the world crazy and getting crazier, right? It's the battle, the war has become more of an asylum where it's hard to control. People are a little out of control. And you're trying to learn the tools to control people in the asylum.
Right, because we have a couple different meanings for the word asylum, right? We have an institution. I'm just looking at the dictionary really quick. An institution for the care of people with mental illness.
Yeah.
But the protection granted to a by a nation to someone who has left their native country as yes. a political refugee. And it can in broadly mean shelter or protection from danger.
Yeah. So with that, on the flip side, that maybe the American independence movement is an asylum for, you know, and the colonies are asylum for those who are downtrodden, persecuted for liberties, right?
I think we're going to get into it here in a minute, this question of tyranny and liberty.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think...
Which for me have always just been these weird words.
Yeah.
Until now that we're living in a current context. And then this show, it's really starting to bring some things to light for me.
Yeah,
absolutely. And this story has been kicking around in my head, and I didn't know when to interject it. So I'm going to interject it now because I think it's relevant. When we went up to go visit Montreal a few weeks ago, we stopped through Montpelier on their way, state capital of Vermont.
Yeah.
And our daughter had mentioned it a couple of times, you know, and then they'd been covering some Vermont history and American history. And she had one of those things as kids do, oh, this or that, you know. And as we're driving up, we're like, oh, we could stop. Let's go check, at least drive by, maybe grab a selfie. Beautiful fall day, Saturday. We're driving by the state capitol building. There's a farmer's market in the parking lot next door. We park. We're like, well, it's Saturday. Is it going to be open? I don't know. So we kind of walk up. Let's get a picture and go to the farmer's market and get a snack. And then we see people kind of coming in and out of the thing. We're like, oh, well, maybe it's open. So we walk up, we walk in, and literally just people like walking in and out of a house, right? There's some, you know, there's no welcome signs. There's no like hours posted or no metal detectors, nothing. Mm. Walk in and there's a state office, state trooper inside the door, you know, at a kind of a little stand. And he's just chatting with people. Hi, how you doing? That kind of stuff. And so we proceed to walk around the state capitol building of Vermont. We look at the Senate chambers. We look at the representative chambers, some meeting rooms. We look at some of the big portraits and big paintings and that kind of stuff. And as we're leaving, my daughter goes, I didn't expect it to be so open.
Yeah.
I thought it would be like an airport, that there would be security and we'd have to do all this stuff. And I just nonchalantly said, well, you know, it's the people's house. It's our house. Of course it's open.
Yeah.
Bam, it hit me, right? It really, really hit me that this idea of self-governance and freedom from tyranny and the rights to govern ourselves through government,
yeah,
how that was, it was like really real for me in that moment.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And on the flip side, I remember last time I was in Philadelphia, and my son was in a stroller. My wife was at a conference. So I walked, it was after 9/11, and the Independence Hall was barricaded, had armed officers outside the door. I stopped, you know, I'm a history guy, you know, it's like, this has been a long time since I've been to the Independence Hall, and I was just standing there, and they said, what are you doing? Get out of here. And it's like, whoa, this was completely counter experience that you had in Vermont.
Right.
I felt I was not welcome in a place that was so important and iconic that we'll see at the end of this episode. It's interesting.
And I think it goes back to that point of that we have to be present and awake to the moment.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into the wokeism, whatever. Right, I'm not talking about that.
No.
I'm talking about, are we as people present to what's going on in our world today and connected to how we govern ourselves and how we manage and mitigate the human beings are freaking messy as hell, yeah. Right? And how are we? And how are we coming together to create prosperity, to create safety, to create a space for all people to live?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now that we're on the other side of Halloween, I'm officially ready to declare it. It's the holiday season. And shopping early this year is definitely a good idea with all of the shipping uncertainties. Luckily, Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else, so that you can cross the important names off your list and relax. You might have heard me say it before, but I've been known to turn to Uncommon Goods over the years for gifts, especially for my family and close friends, the people I want to treat to something unique, memorable, handmade by creative entrepreneurs, something that will last. I've especially plundered the puzzle categories, bought lots of unusual jewelry and accessories. One time I got my friend's son these little baby booties shaped like tacos that still make me laugh every time I see a picture of them. And bonus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So now is the perfect time to start exploring their site before your new favorite gifts sell out. And while you can take advantage of the limited time Lorehounds discounts and get 15% off. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right. Well, do you want to run us through the template then?
Absolutely.
Start it off now that we've talked about
this. Let's do it. So what things stood out?
I think the first thing was... coming to understand how much more Burns is using reenactment.
Yeah.
But he's not doing it in a one-to-one way. He's using it in this impressionistic way. And I think it works really well when you hear the muskets firing and, you know, you see a cannon fire or whatever, or, you know, you see people building barricades and things like that. I think it really helps to tell the story because he's been averse to using reenactment in the past.
There were a lot of reenactors in the Civil War series, and it felt those battles felt like the Civil War. It was really well done. The use of maps and reenactors, right, at a good balance to see what's action. You kind of get into it a little bit more. You're drawn in because you're kind of seeing it. So, yeah.
What else? What worked for you? Or stood out, I should say.
Yeah, things. Yeah. So the integration of forces, the freedmen who fought for the Americans stood out for me, and the Ethiopian regiment for the British that Lord Dunmore put together. Mm. It was part of the story that we were talking about, that it everyone was involved, including African Americans, and that integration would, you know, by the time of the Civil War, of course, you know, that integration was gone. Mm-hmm. They did have white officers for them, of course, but it was, you know, it took decades for that, and then another 100 years for full integration of the military. But yeah, that really stood out.
Got it.
Yeah. And then the power of written ideas, right? The Thomas Paine writes a man, and we saw this in episode one, this network of correspondence.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that. And then the Declaration of Independence. The power of those written ideas are just so important. Just stands out to me. The quick story I have to tell was when I was at Monticello, and I was sitting at the research library desk there, and some gentleman came down And we started to chat, and he said that he was visiting Monticello, knew about the library, wanted to visit here. And he was, I can't remember what, he was from the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. He was from a Caribbean island that he lived through the independence of that island. And they used big chunks of the Declaration of Independence to write, to help write their cause, their argument for freedom, I think, right, from the British. So it is a worldwide document. Mm-hmm. And what stands out is the importance of those words just rippling across the globe.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's interesting. We'll talk more about it later when we get into some of the other themes and topics and what I want to know more about and stuff like that. But something that occurred to me while watching this was this, I'm calling it an original sin in a way, of greed. Mm-hmm. What's causing all of these people to quote unquote rebel? What is causing people to enslave other people? We have a particular form of chattel slavery in the American story, but slavery is a phenomenon that has been present in all geographical regions of human history.
That's right.
At different times.
Yes.
And in different ways and for different purposes. But this idea of owning or controlling other people.
Yeah.
And what is slavery in this time period? It's part of the economic engine of sugar, of cotton, of tobacco.
Yes.
And it just goes back. And what is driving land speculation and murderous rampages of people seeking, you know, lands that they can call their own? But then, wait a minute, those lands are already, you know, occupied by other people. And it just sort of goes back to this question of greed.
Yeah.
Right. This thing that's very much in our human nature. I don't want to call it human nature, but this tendency that we have towards greedy scarcity. Scarcity is different than greed, I think. You know, scarcity mindset versus a greedy mindset. And I don't pretend to understand it, but to me, that this original sin is this: why did the king want to use tyranny? Why did Parliament want to, you know, tax people in this crazy way? Greed, right? They were
right.
Britain was protecting its economic status and wealth.
Yeah, that's, you know, why have an empire, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's for resources. It's mm-hmm. for money.
For whom? For whom are those resources?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Right. Why did Spain go into Central America and just extract mm-hmm. all this gold? Right. It's for a reason, and using slaves for cash crops.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's economic. It's one of the, you know, and of course in the ether of this revolution is the life, liberty, and property.
Right. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Which was changed to happiness.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Jefferson did not use property.
Interesting.
And it's about, yeah, but you're right. There's, you know, people who want property for farms and living life and to be happy, but also property has like human nature, two coins, one side and over the other. It's also a good thing. And it's right. also a, a bad thing when right. you're greed. Interesting.
I think the other thing that stood out for me this episode, and this is just more of a minor point, is that we went from a span of, and we touched on this already, a span of 20 years to a span of about a year.
Yeah.
And this episode, what stood out for me is that this episode, I don't want to say had more coherence, but I could engage with it much better because we weren't just going, you know, we weren't just sort of running through all this really complex and deep history. This is, after all, a series on the American Revolution, not a series on the Seven-Year War.
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, it flowed. I felt more immersed and not rushed. Yeah. So we're moving on to the next question of what did we like? And one of the things that for me is the sickness, right? The smallpox, right? Epidemic. Sickness is the biggest killer in armies and civilians that are around the army. You saw that in the Civil War. You see it in most wars. I did not appreciate the death and the illness of smallpox. That was, I really enjoyed learning about that.
Mm, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that too on for in my most surprised moment. Yeah. I didn't realize, I was like, whoa. And that it basically, because of smallpox, Montreal is not part of the United States of America.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, okay. The I did a little reading on smallpox.
Okay.
The variola virus, there's a major and a minor version, causes a fever, intense fatigue, headaches. You get this rash. It first appears in the mouth, and then it spreads to the extremities and most of the body. And then they turn into a little fluid-filled blisters. I won't get into too many details here. And then the scars and scab, it would scar and then the scabs would fall off. And you were contagious from the moment that the fever started until the last scab fell off.
Whoa.
It was spread by droplets, infected droplets, sheets, bed sheets, you know, touching, being in close contact with other people. And it took about anywhere from 7 to 17 days to incubate. Hmm. And then you didn't become infectious until you had the fever. So really hard to identify because you have that huge time frame where your body, you know, the virus is replicating in your body before it erupts.
Kind of like COVID.
Yeah. And so then suddenly, whoa, how do you track it? How do you slow that down? It's hard because of the incubation period.
Yeah.
And it killed about 1 in 3 people.
Wow.
And it left people severely disfigured and scarred. And the last reported death, if this is correct, was in 1977. And
wow.
We have eradicated smallpox. I don't know that it's made, measles I know is coming back.
Yeah.
But I believe smallpox has been eradicated in the wild. I know we still have samples. So very deadly and very painful and very contagious disease eradicated through vaccination.
Yeah. And what's interesting was this idea of vaccination happening at that moment, right? Where George Washington had to decide, should I vaccinate my troops? Well, that's a problem because they're going to get a little sick. You know, maybe I don't. I know Thomas Jefferson supported vaccination as well. So there are some people, scientists and leaders who supported this idea of vaccination with a little needle and putting in a low amount of the virus in there. It's pretty amazing of science history there.
Right, right. What else did you, what did you like about this episode?
Not
that we like smallpox.
No, exactly.
You like learning about the history.
Learning about, the power of these little viruses to upend everything. The domino theory.
Yes.
The British.
I had that in my notes too. I was like, wait, that's the domino theory.
That's the domino theory. We all know about the domino theory, right? That it was if America falls, then our empire is done for.
Right.
And it brings you back to, the post-World War II era, with Truman and Greece. It's a domino theory. And then, of course, Vietnam. That was one of the things that Lyndon Johnson was worried about and leaders were worried about. If Vietnam falls, Cambodia, Laos, all the rest fall. So we must stop.
Right.
We must stop the dominoes from falling. Yeah.
Even I think it even makes it to Star Trek in a way, sort of. I just remember Picard going, "It must stop here." I think that was the Borg invasion or something. Like
yeah.
That,
so, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing that I liked was toward the end we had the country has a name, United States of America.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Ursula Le Guin.
Wait, say what?
Ursula Le Guin.
Yeah.
With the name. You give you're given a name, right?
the power of names. I got it. I was like, wait, what does she have to do with the formation of our country? Right. No.
Yeah.
Describing the phenomena of naming and true names. And
exactly. Yep. We now have a true name, and people can gather around that name that is part of our vocabulary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, when like you can identify something and you can create a distinction around it, you can say, okay, this is different from that.
Exactly.
Now I can relate to it in a particular way.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Going back to illness, when you can identify it and map the contours of it, then you can, you know, understand the treatment and the protocols that are involved, right? So.
That's right.
What else?
Let's see. I covered animation, the battle and reenactors, the feel, the Civil War series. So that kind of ticks off what I was liking. Anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, I would echo your appreciation of the maps. I loved for the Battle of Bunker Hill, seeing the terrain, seeing the battle plans, and then the battle realities. You know, they got stopped here by this big wall. And I was like, oh yeah, and there's a lot of buildings around, and they're probably taking a lot of crossfire, and they're I forget, is it enfilade when you're high above something, or defilade? I don't know, anyway, whatever. There are it's a very complex thing to show battle progressions, and so having those animated maps with that terrain was really super helpful. I really like that. It was very smart. Yeah,
I agree.
Another thing that I liked, and we kind of talked about this already, is that it was the whole episode was easier to track because the time frame was much more compressed. So I like that. And then I like this idea that Burns and Bossin are introducing, which it's in the story. It's not something overt. But it makes me think of a Tolkien thing, which is that bravery is contagious.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, was it Merry or Pippin who stabs the knight? Spoilers for Lord of the Rings. But is it Merry or Pippin stabs the Witch King in the foot, which then allows Eowyn to, you know, strike a mortal blow?
Yeah.
But there is this thing, because he's seeing other people be brave.
Yes.
So he becomes brave. So I'm thinking about the Pfeiffer who's inspired and then is inspiring, right? Yeah. That all of these people who don't have on a surface level that much in common are inspiring each other to be brave in the face of the Redcoats, which are supposedly a dangerous army, but they're a little bit of they're not a paper tiger in all senses of the words, but they are they're. Their reputation is bigger than their actual effectiveness in battle.
Yeah.
And that without bravery amongst the patriots, right? But then that's a really complex thing because, you know, and I don't want to overhear to mythologize it, because a lot of that is driven by desperation.
Yeah.
It's driven by mob violence. Like if I go home and I didn't fight, then the mob's going to come for me, right? You know, so it's a complex thing, but just in the face of the sheer amount of death and destruction that's being it's pretty wild that there are people who could see their way through to being brave and then inspiring others.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something as you know, you see this in the series, you know, when you're fighting, so you got men next to you that would, you know, help you be more brave. You've got like the First Continental Congress and then the Second Continental Congress with new people coming on board. You're not alone, right?
Right.
And that gives you inspiration to move together,
right?
And not just one person.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
All right. So we're going to continue on our little template here about what did you dislike. Why don't you start out that one, David?
I didn't have many dislikes on this, and I just I don't want to dig too deep into this, but I'm debating the format. Should we have 6 2-hour episodes or 12 1-hour episodes? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Where a lot of people on the Discord and people I'm talking to, they're like, oh, yeah, I can't do 2 hours. Right? Yeah. I've got to break this up. Yeah. So it's hard to say what's the right formatting, and I'm sure they deliberated over. But that's like the only thing I could come up that I, quote unquote, disliked.
So. Yeah, and you make a good point because, you know, as a lot of us, especially us in our community, we are used to watching 1-hour episodes, right? Sometimes 2 episodes will drop and we complain about that, right? It's true. It's too much. Yeah. It's too much. And yeah, it would be interesting to have like maybe 1-hour episodes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could artificially do that. You could stop it at 1 hour, but then it doesn't conclude.
Right.
You know, they don't tell a wrapped story. So, like I said, it's just a minor nitpick. I don't want to get stuck in on what the formatting is, because once they're released and available for streaming and whatever, you can watch it in your own pace. But still,
exactly.
I know they had a conundrum, like, how do we do this? And that's why they're doing, you know, why they made a choice for 6 nightly 2-hour episodes for terrestrial broadcast and streaming and whatever. It's a complex soup of choices for broadcasters these days.
Exactly. And it's a much changed environment from the Civil War and the jazz, some of the earlier stuff in baseball than it is now. Yeah, it's a new environment to navigate.
What about you?
So I had to think about this because there wasn't a whole lot of dislikes here. The music, I thought I was, you know, in the Civil War, there were some iconic songs that came back over and over again through the series, through the episodes. And I didn't have that as much because I know that they could deliver, but they did a very nice job though at the end. I think it was America the Beautiful and Violin.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. So it's like that. Yeah. That is a callback to the Civil War, the famous song with the violin that, you know, came out on the soundtrack and it was a hit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's in my head. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was saying, maybe, you know, think about the music, but we'll see. It's still early. And then I think I would love to see just, I think, more women voices. I think we just had a couple. But, you know, it's overall very good, though.
And I think that's something what I was trying to point to as well is if he front loads too much.
Yeah.
Then it's going to get the complexity of reaction is going to be a little bit too dynamic. And I think he's probably being careful about which stories to tell and which stories to bring forward, not as a political agenda thing.
No,
but as I want to tell a story that if somebody bumps up against an idea or an issue that they don't feel overwhelmed by it, but they can actually start to appreciate and approach it. And there were some great quotes by some women in this, and some great quotes from some enslaved people who were like, I forget the gentleman's name. It was in my notes somewhere, but the boy, was it Jefferson, who was like writing the Declaration of Independence. And then the dude was like, yo, man, he didn't want to pay me. So like,
George Washington, Darby.
Was it George Washington? It was George Washington, not Jefferson. I got confused, but
Darby Vassal.
Yeah, right.
Or Dabney Russell. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
And you have it in your notes.
Yeah, so, I do.
Okay.
Which, we can just move on. I can tell you about it. So one of the things I wanted to know more about.
It's funny. I wasn't even looking at the outline. It's right there.
Nicely done. We can tell you're a professional.
Oh, half the time I'm just feeling my way through the dark. So
very good. Me too. Dabney Russell was a great story with George Washington. Hey, why don't you do a little chores? Like, okay, how much are you going to pay me? Pay you?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And it's like, I'm out of here, buddy.
Yeah.
I love it. I want to know more about that. And, you know, he lived to apparently a long life and wrote and had some
stories to tell about that.
Yeah. So it's like, I got to learn more about this kid. That was awesome. I want to learn more about Dunmore's fleet.
Yeah.
That was out there,
right? Floating city,
Floating city with rafts. It was segregated. And of course, smallpox just devastated them. And it's like, And I guess it's not the only fleet that was out there with these royal governors, but it's like, can you imagine on these boats? I mean, we're not talking cruise ships, people. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, people stacked up in those small places. And I want to learn more about that. It's okay. Crazy. Yeah. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. How about you?
I thought it was interesting that Whigs and Tories are around at this time. Yeah. And so I kind of wanted to understand. It made me interested in political parties and the history of political mm-hmm. parties. When you have a monarchical rule, you know, you might have factions and different, say, what's the right word I'm looking for? Not the gentry is not the word. Anyway, just all the system of barons and dukes and duchesses, you know, and all these kinds of things. You might have factions with those and those, that organizational structure.
Yeah.
But political parties, and I recognize the word Whigs and I recognize the word Tories, and I know yeah. political parties have changed. Democrats, Republicans have, are not, wouldn't necessarily be recognizable now to, you know, if we brought somebody, you know, back from the past. So it just, it was a thing that caught my eye. I was like, oh, yeah. or in my ear, Whigs and Tories.
Yeah.
The definitely. Other thing that I thought was really interesting and would love to know more about too, and I think they do a good job of laying out this conundrum of both enslaved people as well as Native Americans. Which side do I fight for if I fight?
Yes. Yes.
And there's a conundrum there.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more story to be told as to why did this community or this individual or this family do this or do that.
Yeah.
And I think when we get into the complexities and the nuances of history, there's a lot there that would be interesting about what was the rationale that an individual or a community used to make a choice about who they allied with or didn't ally with at all, you know, like, you know, loyalists or patriots or no choice.
Yeah.
And there's a complex thing going on there with the different Native American tribes who had had long contact with the British long before the Americas were, you know, these colonies. And then as with the enslaved people who were like, oh, I'm being promised freedom. Is that an opportunity? Or, mm-hmm. you know, those patriot guys, they look to be like pretty messy and violent. I don't know if I want to hang out with them because I don't know that I'm going to get my. Yeah. They're just there's a lot of complex decision-making going on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I can imagine just hanging around, you know, just trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Like, what do we do? Do we go with the British? Maybe. Yeah. It's a complex decision.
I think the last thing I'd love to learn more about is it Thomas Paine and the Common Sense pamphlet book thing that he wrote. I was like, oh, yeah, because there's always been something stuck in my mind around public school and how public school is supposed to operate in the United States, which is mm-hmm. And somewhere I heard this and it's never been dislodged in my brain and I don't know much about it, but this idea of common sense. How do you create common sense? There's both common sense of, well, you know, don't walk around a construction site at night, you know, without a flashlight, right? There's that kind of common sense. And then there's common sense of, you and I have a basic understanding of, you know, being both citizens, what our responsibilities are to ourselves, but to our fellows and to our neighbors.
Yeah.
That, you know, we put our trash out on, you know, Wednesday nights and you put it in the, whatever, you have all these things. But yeah, we have a common sensibility. Yeah, there's laws about stop signs, but, you know, we understand why that's necessary or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a common sense ability among the people. And I'd be curious to actually read his pamphlet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it a book or a pamphlet? One. I can't remember now.
Yeah. I think it's a pamphlet.
Okay.
It's such an important document to get people on board with this idea of independence.
Right. And I don't remember it in any history lesson.
Oh, okay.
I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember. I don't know how it's been distilled and broken out and distributed, but I don't ever remember encountering it as a whole.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
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 47 page pamphlet. Okay. That's like a,
okay.
Yeah. That's a small book. Like a, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come on.
Pamphlet,
yeah.
I don't know.
So, all right.
Yeah, that's it for my know more about list.
Okay. So we'll move on to what surprised you the most. Did you want to talk a little bit about Boston?
Yeah.
You listed there. Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing those maps of Boston, I was like, what is going on? I had no idea. I mean, I know that in a lot, I'm originally from Seattle, and I know there's a bunch of waterfront that was, you know, we have the Denny Regrade, and it's literally called Regrade because they flattened this hill and they took all the dirt and they put it down into the harbor to create more usable harbor space.
Yeah.
And so I know we've done a lot of terraforming. Was it Governor's Island in New York City in the, you know, in, between Brooklyn and Manhattan there?
Yeah.
Right. That's a, you know, half of that is a made island of, you know, just built.
That's right. That's right. A lot of places in New York City, which we'll learn next week, is now like more in the city.
It's not exactly.
Shoreline.
Yeah. So I had no idea that Boston had been terraformed to that degree, to that level. So that was surprising.
That was interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think somebody on the Discord was saying that they were also surprised by that. So
cool.
I think the other thing that continues to surprise me, and maybe this won't ever come off my list, is just the scale of violence and death and brutality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they layered in disease today, and you're like, wait, you're not just at risk of the environment, and you're not just at risk of the mob or the redcoats. but like, you start stacking all of that up, and it was a nasty and brutish time to be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Your life expectancy was short to begin with. And now you throw this in the mix, and, I can imagine like getting hit and being wounded and surviving that.
Right. Yeah. And then the secondary realization of that is that, you know, our country's history is one of violence and brutality.
Yeah.
Which is so, when you compare it to these really important ideals that have changed the shape of human history.
Yeah.
Of freedom and liberty. But at what cost? Right. Yeah. I'm not questioning the cost one way. I'm just putting those things together and just going, wow. I think you mentioned it last episode, just the brutality of violence, be it mob, be it redcoat, be it whatever.
Yeah. And there's nothing like violence to help people understand the stakes, right? It's like all of a sudden, you're seeing these ships circling your harbor and shutting it down in Boston. And you realize, you know, you've got these, you know, 30 gun plus ships out there. And you realized my shop is in trouble.
The burning of Falmouth, which is now Portland, I believe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. And now you are faced now with that violence. You are forced to face a decision. What do I do? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a change agent, I think. Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's it for my list.
And what I had was what we talked about before, the 5,000 freed men who fought for America. That was kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. And of course, the smallpox, which you mentioned earlier. Yeah.
Oh, I had something else on my list too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which is that the Declaration of Independence is... you know, it's this noble and heroic document and declaring our independence. But what I thought was also interesting and surprised me was that it's an indictment of tyranny.
Yes. Yes.
It's almost like a speaking indictment. You know, we talk about that in some ways, you know, when a prosecutor uses that and they lay out this series of charges.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And that gets forgotten a lot of times.
It is. It is not part of the declaration we talk about, but they did a great job. You know, this is the indictment. It's a list of crimes, I think.
Yeah.
Alan Taylor talked about. The king is the enemy.
Yeah.
And Atlantic slave trade was upon us.
Yeah. And this, that, and the other thing are not, we cannot suffer these things.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good thought. Good thought. Nice. Okay. So our last group is what are the story or stories Burns is telling and how well did he tell it? For me, There's a few of them that one is like people are divided, right? Mm-hmm. That's the story. The loyalists are about law and order, supporting the British, you know, unwritten constitution versus these rebels. You know, that's it's still an important story that we get a little bit here and there in this episode. I'm hoping as we go forward, we'll get a little more about the loyalists as well.
Okay.
And this idea of patriots are not perfect people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have that too.
Yeah. Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal, but it's a tool, right, to expand that equality. And George Washington and his slaves, right, about allowing free black people to fight. So on one side, he was a slave owner, but he allowed free blacks to fight in the Continental Army,
right,
which I didn't know. It's like, wow. So there you go. There's this, they're not perfect. They're all, you know, but they're human beings. So you kind of appreciate that story that he's trying to tell in that well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have that. Go ahead.
The final thing, national identity, right? Okay. This declaration is a tool for expansion of those rights. Yeah. So those are the kind of stories. How about you?
I had a couple of similar things. No one is a hero. All are flawed and compromised. There is no purity.
Yeah.
That all of these men and women who benefited from enslavement and were then writing this document to say, but we're all equal, but then that this idea, this is my other note on this, is that the idea of liberty inspired everyone.
Yes.
Liberty, the free, you know, being free from tyranny. And when we have slavery and enslavement, that there's you know, you want freedom from enslavement, be it in some cases they were writing, we don't want to be enslaved to Britain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. We do not want to have taxation without representation.
Yeah. We want to be freed of this.
We'll pay taxes, empire. But we need to have a say in how that money, what money is collected and how it's spent.
Yeah.
And then, but then there's, this idea of, well, if you're saying that you can be free from tyranny, how is it that you, you can enslave somebody else and not pay them? Like, hey, how much you get a baby, bub? Nothing. Are you crazy, man? Like,
wow, I'm out of here.
Yeah. But that this idea that with the Declaration of Independence and this idea of liberty against tyranny, inspired everyone. Inspired Native Americans. Inspired women. Enslaved peoples. It was a powerful idea and a new idea.
Yes, exactly.
This is possible. We can do this. We don't have to live under this
authoritarian world.
In where I don't have any room to grow and to own my own thing. Everything that I do is owned by somebody else and I'm paying up and up. Yeah. And I think that's something that resonates in today's world, right? We're constantly paying up and up. I kind of don't own my phone anymore. I just pay off a fee over the course of the year until I'm ready for the new one. I'm just constantly paying.
That's right. That's right.
Same with cars, same with houses, right?
Yeah. 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 It, you know, when you really think about what you really truly own, right?
Yeah.
And, I can own my ideas, my freedom, my autonomy. Mm-hmm. And it's those, that powerful, universal, evergreen idea of liberty, of rights.
And that's what's interesting as well. I think a story that's being told is that all of these various Americans who are showing up to become Americans, but from all over the place, there's a great moment where they talk about the Virginians coming up and they have rifled barrel, you know, their guns have rifled.
The long rifles.
With the spirals as opposed to a smoothbore musket. So they're more accurate. They dress differently. They have different little cultural elements compared to, you know, somebody from upstate New York or, you know, Maine or whatever. So they have very little in common, but then they have everything in common.
Yes.
And that everything in common is this idea that we want to live under a government of our own choosing.
Yes. We want our house, as you said in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, our country is our house, not yours.
No, exactly. And that barbarity and tyranny will backfire.
Yeah, exactly.
Move that they were like, oh, you know, these people, you know, they just need to be put down or whatever. Yeah. So we're going to quarter troops here and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And we see it, I think, today in some stuff, not to get too concurrent politically,
right.
But we can see that when unmasked, you know, masked forces or, you know, sort of come into a community and what have you and start doing stuff, tyrannical stuff, it doesn't work out well in the long run for the people who try to use tyranny and
that's
barbarity.
That's right.
It's deep in our bones, I think, as a country.
Yeah.
That we don't like exactly. That stuff.
No, no, exactly. Exactly. Well said. Yeah. It is there and we're seeing it then and we're seeing it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the British, like, always overestimates us, you know, the use of power and underestimated.
They overestimate their skills and ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Use of force, use of power. And it backfires.
All right. Well, we win an hour. It's hard not to go a little bit long on these. There's so much there. But it, you know, nice not having, I don't know when we have to, we'll talk offline about when we're going to record episode 3, because we
both good.
Have to watch that. And maybe, yeah, we'll see how we go. Otherwise, thank you everyone for joining us on this. Again, this is a little bit more off the cuff, a little less unscripted. A little bit more reaction than analysis, and hopefully it's adding something to your appreciation of American history, whether you're an American or not.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, the podcast is here. So if you're watching at a different pace, then, you know, feel free to come back when you get around to it. I'm not going to go into the whole thank yous of our Discord server boosters and our lore masters. You all know who you are. So I'm just for time savings. Again, if you're curious about other things we're covering, check out the link tree in the show notes and join us on the Discord and send feedback to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.